Welcome to The Word in 10, a podcast of Dwell Community Church. My name is Jim Leffel, and I've been a many-decade teacher here at Dwell, and it's my privilege to share with you studies that we are doing in Pace Setters, the teaching ministry with our senior citizens, and we are in Ephesians chapter 2, verses 11 to 21 for the next three sessions. The issue of unity is a central concern of Paul in this letter because it's a central concern in Roman society, namely that there is a rift, a serious rift between Jews and Gentiles. And as the church is reaching out beyond its Jewish foundations into the Gentile world, the Gentiles are beginning to respond in faith. And this means that the rift in society is now really taking root in the church itself. And so there is nothing more than hostility, really, and distrust in the heart of the Jewish people as a whole in relation to how they viewed the Gentiles, whom they called dogs, not even human. And so you get a sense of the level of antagonism that exists between these people. And we also know that in today's world, though much more muted, we also are a culture in disunity, that there is massive distrust between people. There's a distance and a siloing of our cultures between different kinds of groups. And so in this way, this call to unity that Paul describes in chapter 2 and on and through the rest of the letter, really, is of fundamental importance in application to us as well. Paul says, therefore, remember that you, the Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by the so-called circumcision, which is performed by the flesh by human hands, remember that you were at that time separate from Christ, excluded from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. And so Paul begins to address first the Gentiles. And to them he says twice, remember. And so if we're thinking about the need to cultivate real unity, to establishing peace between parties, remembering is the first step. And so what are they to remember? Two things, really. The first is a call to humility. He says, you were once outsiders from God's chosen people, meaning, importantly, that the salvation that these Gentile believers experience, that they enjoy now, is rooted in God's historic work through the Jewish people. And therefore, it is important that they begin to have God's perspective on who these people are with whom they have this significant ethnic tension. And then secondly, and in many ways more importantly, there is a call to gratitude, that we remember where we were before God found us, that though the Romans were a great people, they had no answer to the questions that mattered. They were lost. The Romans, like the Greeks before them, excelled in learning of every kind, mathematics, geometry, logic, science, the writing of history, art, and so many areas they excelled, and that we really in today live in their shadow. Yet at the same time, he says that they were without hope and without God in the world. And then he says, without God in the world, this is the present dilemma, that all we have is our own resources. And with our own resources, we do not have the capacity to answer the true questions that matter about our life, nor do we have the tools at our disposal to resolve the fundamental tensions that we face as a society. And so Paul is appealing to the Gentiles here to remember that everything that they have comes from the hand of God, and that that hand of God was mediated through the Jewish people. And so having identified then their lostness apart from Christ in verses 13 to 15, Paul then brings the foundational move in what makes for real peace and unity among people, where he says, but now, in Christ Jesus, you who were formerly far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace, who made both groups into one and broke down the barrier of the dividing wall by abolishing in his flesh the enmity, which is the law of commandments contained in ordinances, so that he himself might make the two into one new man, thus establishing peace." And what a powerful paragraph this is. What is Paul saying? He's using this language that he started using in chapter 1, in Christ, or joined with Christ, or identified with Christ. It's the idea that we have a standing before God that is based upon our participation in what Christ has done on our behalf. That is to say that when Christ died on the cross, he died our death, that we are identified with his death. And in his resurrection, also, we are identified with him. And so the Christian faith is not just a matter of believing the right kinds of things. And nor is it a matter of simply being judicially declared forgiven. It is a participation, really, in the very person of Christ himself. So that what is true of Christ becomes all true of all of us who are in Christ. It's difficult to take this abstract idea and simplify it, but I love the way that our African-American brothers and sisters have done this over the course of these many, many decades. In African-American exposition on passages like this, they use the metaphor of a train. It's the idea that the train goes on rails that are going someplace, that it's a fixed future, that the train is driven by an engine that is the most powerful thing in their experience. And so the idea is then that as we come on board, as we join the train, as we become a part of it, that we share its destiny. We share its power, so that when we are in the train, we are a part of something greater than ourselves. And so it is in the gospel songs, "People Get Ready," or "This Train is Bound for Glory," this call to a participation in the person of Christ. And here in this paragraph, Paul is taking that identification with Christ in a different direction, not merely as an individual standing before God in Christ, but rather as a corporate identity. He says, we are a new humanity. Yes, salvation relates to each of us individually. All the blessings in Christ are for you. But the scriptures are also clear that salvation is a we, not a me. And so I'd like to leave you with a question. How might you preserve the unity we share in Christ against our tendencies towards disunity? How will the call to remember where we were before we met Christ, how will this reality of a corporate identity in Christ, how will this example of Christ atoning sacrifice on the cross for us provide for us a framework of understanding of what does it look like for me then to set aside my grievances with others, to be genuinely a peacemaker and one who is working for true unity? Well, next time we're going to continue our study of Ephesians 2, exploring reconciliation, the next step in establishing a true unity in peace.